Have you ever wondered how, in the field of genetics, you've been able to give us such fast results? We've sequenced numerous genomes, including our own. That's tens of thousands of genes in less than a decade of scientific research. We sent naked scientist Meera Senthilingam to the Wellcome Sanger Institute in Hingston, where a significant proportion of the recently completed human genome sequence was decoded, to find out what this has to do with robots.
This week, I'm at the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute in Hingston, Cambridgeshire, where DNA sequencing and analysis occur on a huge scale to help us understand just what our genes do and how they function. This one place sequenced a third of the 25,000-gened human genome. But how did they do it? In order to have genes ready to be sequenced, you need to insert the gene into a bacterium for which you already know the DNA sequence. You place this gene insert between a part of the sequence that encodes colour, for example blue colouring. That way, when the bacterium multiplies to produce colonies, the bacteria containing your insert will be disrupted in this colouring and remain colourless. This allows you to pick them out from the blue bacterial colonies that don't have your gene insert. So you then pick out your colonies, break open the cells of the bacteria, extract the DNA, and load it onto the machines to be sequenced. But as smooth as that sounds, the stages, such as picking the colonies, can be tedious and time-consuming, and can also differ depending on the opinion of the people choosing the colonies. The solution? Get a robot to do this for you. The robots that pick colonies are basically a big box in which there's a tray at the bottom to put lots of Petri dishes in, and a robotic arm that hangs down from the top and seems to slide around. But how on earth does this box actually pick specific colonies of bacteria? I'm off to meet Sarah Sims, who's going to fill me in on just how these robots do their job.
Well, there's a camera that looks at each of the Petri dishes, which have got colonies on them, and it can see the colonies. It's been programmed to look at a certain size of colony, whether it's a single colony, and what colour it is, because there are two types of colony on there. There's a colony with an insert and one without an insert, and the one without an insert is blue. And the robot's able to identify that and doesn't pick blue colonies, just picks the colonies that have the insert.
Just in the time that I've been in here now, how many colonies would you say have been picked?
Well, it picks about 2,000 colonies an hour. Before robots, we used to pick about 800 colonies compared to 2,000.
That's a really big difference.
Yes, it is. It's made a huge difference with the amount of throughput we can do.
So, I mean, I know that when it comes to kind of picking colonies and things like that, you need really sterile conditions because it's so easy for things to get contaminated. How is that managed with robots?
Well, the room that we're in is in sterile conditions with the air filtered. And also the robots are enclosed in a glass box, which helps to prevent any air getting in to contaminate things.
I don't think I need to say that surely you're very happy about the introduction of robots.
Yes, with the numbers that we have to produce, we wouldn't be able to do it without an awful lot more people and an awful lot more lab space.
So having learnt just what a difference the robots have made here at the Sanger Institute, I want to know how they work and how they were designed in the first place. So I'm here with Jonathan Davis, who's project manager on the robotics team. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
You design the robots, do you?
Yes, we look at what the people in the labs want to do, and then we try and design a robot that'll cope with the tasks that they want to perform.
Did you design, say, the colony-picking one or the pipetting ones, which I've happened to see this morning?
Yes, they were designed by this group.
What was actually involved in coming up with the designs for those robots?
There was quite a lot of work to do with camera imaging and looking at colonies. When they pick them by hand, you use a lot of judgment by your own eye and your own hand, but making the robot make those sort of judgments as well. It took quite a bit of fine-tuning to get it right.
Would you say that the robots are more accurate than the samples being done manually?
I think what's probably more important is that they do the same task again and again with the same accuracy. A person doing it, sometimes you get it spot on, other times it's not quite, but with the robot doing it, you get the same result time after time after time, and that's usually what's wanted.
These robots have made a big impact on work here at Sanger Institute. What's next? What are the future prospects?
We're trying to come up with robots that are a lot more flexible. The ones you've seen were designed for one job, and they do one job only. They do it very well, but people want to do different tasks depending on what results they get. They might want to change the robot to do it, so they want to add a bit of intelligence, if you like, so we're trying to go down that route.
But is there any risk, say, in developing robots like that, that you might be pushing aside actual people in the labs?
The decisions that these robots make, they're no way as clever as a human being. They can only make pretty limited decisions, to be honest. They haven't got the intuition that a human being has got, which is what you need to get new results and things moving forward.
It looks like this is only the beginning of robot use in gene sequencing, but I don't think this is a case where robots are going to take over the role of humans. Robotics is merely taking away the drudgery of lab work, allowing teams to spend time on more complicated procedures and theories, and preventing them from getting things like repetitive strain injury. I wonder if I can get them to design a robot to do my typing for me.
That was Meera Senthilingam finding out about the importance of robots in gene sequencing at the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute.
And this is The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris and Dr. Dave, and we're talking about robots this week. In a second, we'll be catching up with Professor Jim Little and Dr. Per-Erik Forsen there at the UBC, and they've done something called the Semantic Robot Vision Challenge. In other words, building a robot that can identify things and teach itself to identify things by looking up pictures on the internet. How do they do that? Well, we'll be finding out shortly. We'll also be exploring artificial intelligence. How do you make robots so that they can actually teach themselves things and become more intelligent in themselves? And could that have murderous consequences for us, the people who own and build them? And also, we'll be showing you how to build your very own electromagnet.
The Naked Scientist Podcast, brought to you by thenakedscientist.com.
And if you'd like to get in touch with The Naked Scientist, with Dr. Chris and Dr. Dave, email chris@thenakedscientist.com.